in brightest day, in blackest night, all other podcasts tremble in fright. Losers cower before the power. Orange is lust and blues you can trust. Indigos feel and white ones heal. Yellow scare and green ones dare. That sapphire love and black hands glove will rock your foundation without hesitation. Chad and Marge face evil's might. Respect their power, for they'll make you see the light.
Hi, everybody. I'm Chad Volkelman.
I'm Mark Marble.
And this is the Lantern Cast.
Episode 552, I think.
All right. We are talking about Green Lantern number 9 from Jeremy Adams and Zermonico, right? Where Escape from Earth is our title?
Escape from Earth is the on the cover title, yes. And I like the cover, at least the one we get in the digital. I think that one's even though Hal kind of looks constipated on that cover. But yeah, for the most part,
it's okay. It's
a lot of black space.
Yeah, it's a good piece of art. It's good painting because it's Steve Beach, very clearly, who's, you know, a known artist and stuff. And he's, you know, done this style quite a few times. I don't like it as a cover, though. Like, I know I've been doing I recently posted a trading card opening over on our YouTube channel, quick plug, but quite honestly, this looks more like a cool trading card artwork. Like if they did like one of those glossy artistic series back in the 90s, I would expect to see this on a, you know, this on a Green Lantern card. 'Cause it's very watercolor artistic. Like, I don't think I like it as an actual cover.
Yeah. I can see that point of view. We certainly have just seen shittier covers. Did he do the one last month that was horrible? Did he do one? It just reminded me of this artwork.
Do your review and I'll check.
Yeah, it may not have been him, but the problem is they've been doing so many alternate covers that it's like you just never know. So at this point, if I see one that doesn't make me want to Pearl, and usually I think it's a kind of a victory at this point. All right, so let's try to roll through this. And so how are we going to do this? I'm going to do this, you're going to do the Jessica story, and then we come back and talk about everything. That's what I'm assuming.
Sure.
Okay. All right, so the actual in issue title is Into the Green. So it's Jeremy Adams, Romanico, Romulo Fajardo Jr., colorist, Dave Sharp, letterer, Steve Beaches, Chad mentioned was the cover artist, varying cover artists, Evan Doc Shaner.
He was on the
previous, that's what I thought.
Yep.
Nathan Deserti and Juano Lopez, they all did varying covers too. We have Jillian Grant, the assistant editor, and Paul Kaminsky remains the group editor, I guess, technically just editor. So we pick up where we left off, where Hal is being sent to this place in Spain that Madame Xanadu was pointing him to, where he felt this big pull of energy when he was duking it out with Sinestro. So he finds this opening in the ground. He goes into the tunnel. He's kind of concerned for a while because there's just pretty much darkness. But then he sees literally light at the end of the tunnel. He doesn't know what he's going to find there. And he finds basically this lush, vibrant world of greens and purples. They're just almost like an Eden-like place. And then what does he find there by luck of the draw? He finds Tom Cal McCoo, which of course throws Hal off and throw a lot of people off. And this is where we get one of the interesting references in this book. And now I guess it's okay to spoil it. Mm-hmm. Oh, hey, people are really pieces of work. That we have a tie-in. We have a tie-in to Millennium, essentially, because Tom's dream, a guardian came to him and basically told him he was chosen and he had to go find this place, which he kind of like literally stumbles into. And it has to do with he's the last of the new guardians, which if you read Millennium, you'll understand. If you didn't, we've talked about Millennium briefly or here and there over the years. It was with Ryan, wasn't it? upon the things he did.
Yeah, because it was Secret Origin when they was it the Guardians and the Floronic Man.
Yes, I remember the Floronic Man. Yes.
Yeah.
So Tom talks about he was told the green is one of the elemental forces of the universe and binds all plant life and creation, and basically this was concealed for a time. This was a failsafe. This was a failsafe that Tom was supposed to protect till a lantern came to it. And essentially we find out there's an existing Owen central power battery buried inside the earth in this place, which is, we can talk about that, and I'm sure we will. And this is like a designated safe house for survivor lanterns. And we also get an explanation for why we get several explanations. We get explanations for why another attempt at explaining why Earth has so many green lanterns is because of the fact that by the very nature of the fact that we as a group just don't follow orders well, that the Guardians somehow, according to this theory, deemed us as the most likely to be able to, despite us not following orders and kind of going along with that need that we have to buck the system, in a way we would be the most natural protectors in case anything ever happened to Oa and anything ever happened to the Guardians or somebody basically tried to subvert the power, that the Earth Lanterns would be most uniquely qualified to be able to basically try to set things right and stand up to who's ever doing things incorrectly. We also find out that, Hal's ring, I'm going to get the real explanation here. Hal's ring, what does he say? It's a shadow of something, right? It's
just a byproduct slash shadow.
Yeah, it's a byproduct. And that's, so it's not, it was never really a ring, which we kind of knew it wasn't really a ring. And that's the reason why Hal, when he tries to charge his pseudo ring off this existing central power battery, it basically dissipates. So but luckily the Guardians seemingly thought of everything. So this, like this mini ring foundry, which has already created 6 rings, and apparently can create more as the need be. So I guess Simon Baz, you're out of luck. Because there really were 7, right? Unless you don't count John Stewart right now. There would be 7 Earth Lanterns with, if you considered Simon Baz. But he doesn't have a ring last time we saw him, right, still? So I guess maybe...
Well, no. So there's 6. So that's Hal, that's John, that's Guy, that's Kyle, that's Jessica, and that's Simon.
And Joe.
Joe doesn't have a regular ring.
Doesn't say it has to be a regular ring.
Well, no, in terms of her recruitment wasn't like, I don't know. I just, it's a specialized ring given to her by a different guard.
Right, because it doesn't need to be recharged. You can make the case, but
yeah.
I originally thought it, all kidding aside, I originally assumed it included Simon, but then when Joe shows up, it reminds me that technically we have 7 Earth Lanterns.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, it wouldn't matter because this mini ring foundry could create more rings than the 6 that are already. It just will take time. So Hal takes a ring. So it's going to be weird because Hal is not right now. It's going to have more of a chunk ring than a round ring. He says the oath. He recharges his ring, and Hal pretty much. And the good news for Tom is now Tom can go home. Take care, Green Lantern. I do kind of like this. Tom's little statement about it seems like our destinies are always intertwined in this universe as well as many others, which reminds me of a conversation Hal and Carol had in the Spectre run, that they were tied together and their relationships have been all different kinds, friends, lovers, mother, child, father, whatever, that the relationships have taken on different permutations throughout time, space, and universes. So Tom kind of gives a little bit of that too. Tom goes about his business. Hal's recharged. He knows now that he can leave the Earth, so he does. Chris has a flaw a little bit in this thinking, but it's Hal, so it makes sense, and we'll talk about it. Hal does think about Carol shortly before going full on into hyperspace, thinking that basically it's not fair to her because his heart really ultimately belongs to being a Green Lantern more than anything else. So the idea of if you love someone, set them free. So he's kind of like, in a way, giving his tacit approval for Carol to move on without him. Hal starts flying back to Oa. As Hal's flying back to Oa, all of a sudden, he's basically pulled out of hyperspace. And he finds himself in the mix of kind of a fight between the United Planet Lanterns that are intercepting a ship trying to leave the quarantine of 2814. And Hal encounters that bird face one was the one he fought in the other issue, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because they both recognize each other. Hal starts taking them on with the Green Energy, and he's doing pretty well against them, fine, when it's Green Energy against Green Energy. They shift to Red Energy, and all of a sudden, Hal's in trouble. They kind of put Hal in chains. They're taking him down to Oa to take him to the Great Hall, and they're going to interrogate him before the science cells and everything else. Just before Hal's that is about to be completely taken away into the science cells, basically the Red Lanterns get run over by this big green construct tank, and we find out that, hey, it's Joe coming to rescue Hal. And that's pretty much the end of the proper issue.
Meanwhile, in our backup story called The Trial of Jessica Cruz, writer Sam Humphries, artist Yasmin Flores Montanez, colorist Alex Guimari, I don't know, letterer Dave Sharp, assistant editor Jillian Grant, editor
Guimari's probably.
Yep. We are on planet Oa while Jessica stands before the United Planets with a bunch of different UP lanterns pointing various weapons at her. She's already apprehended, guys. She's already in front of the UP. Why are you pointing weapons at her? She's on trial. She's not being arrested. Good God. Anyways, Tharos is, you know, interrogating her about a mission that she went on with another UP lantern called Lantern Endicott. Their mission was to blow up the Orange Lantern power battery, which is a second confirmation. There was a first confirmation in Mark's recap. We'll get to that in a minute. Apparently, Joe absorbed the explosion of the Orange Lantern power battery. She says it was because Lantern Endicott placed it at the base, and that wasn't going to do anything. It was just going to make it leak. And in the middle of all this, while Tharos and them are accusing her of treason, a Jessica's ring, which, as we remember, speaks to her, which I only mentioned because we haven't seen it in a while, but this is normal for Jessica.
And it is Humphries, so that would make sense. He would be able to remember that quickly.
Mm-hmm. A Green Lantern up in the balcony wearing a face mask takes aim at Tharos and tries to assassinate him. Jessica protects him. Tharos sends the other lanterns after the assassin while he talks to Jessica, trying to get where she really stands. And she says, I know about chaos and lawlessness. It took my friends and it almost ruined my life. The Guardians almost let it destroy the universe. You won't. I stand with Lord Premier Tharos. And he's like, hey, I'm going to take you into my lantern council, my Lord Premier's lantern council. And then she's over, I guess, in the locker rooms. I guess we have locker rooms. And one of the United Planets lanterns are, I guess, who's on the council with her, is all fired up for her. And then she sends off a communication to Joe in secret. He totally bought it. I'm in. In the next, Guy Gardner's Bogus Lobo Adventure Begins, which those are two, there are two words in that sentence, which really capture my eye, being bogus and adventure. So I'm definitely going to be looking for Bill and Ted themes in the very next backup.
Oh, these backup stories. I'm hoping the Guy one, at least, since it said begins, you kind of assume it's not a one-off. So let's hope that those backup stories have a little more substance than some of the other ones we've gotten in this book lately. And I'm not just zeroing in on this one, but I'm going back to the stupid Sinister Sons thing. And
I will say that Green Lantern 11 does have an Evan Shaner variant card of Lobo giving Hal Jordan a noogie. So if Lobo's on a variant cover, I would assume for 11, I would assume that the backup story features Lobo. Otherwise, why have him on the cover?
And that would make sense, because if this is issue 9, then we know. Yeah. And they say the Guy Gardner story just begins next issue. You assume it'll at least be a 2-issue.
Yeah.
A 2-issue thing. I'm not sure where we begin with all this.
Let's start with your story.
So for the most part, I enjoyed the story for the most part. I think the art across the board in this issue is kind of hit and miss. There are some things that are really good, some things that are bad. Or not bad, maybe a little harsh. Things that don't work as well. Hal's head does look awfully long sometimes. He kind of looks Sinestro-like when he's drawn. And maybe that's not done by accident, but it does look, when he's flying especially, he seems to have a very prolonged forehead. I don't know how I feel about having a back having have a having a hidden central power battery in the middle of Earth. Well, we had a white battery in Earth, or a white entity in Earth, I should say. So why not? I guess there's plenty of room.
Yeah, that's true.
But I don't know about I think it is still a little shaky to really buy into that. The Guardians, who oftentimes seem to, other than Ganthet, seem to have a hate on for Earth Lantern specifically because they are completely unreliable when it comes to following orders, yet that they're going to be the help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi, you're my only hope. They may be able to count on them or suspect they would be able to sniff out trouble more than others or be willing to dig. So I think that part of the potential equation makes sense to me, but I don't know. I think in all this, I'm getting to the point, I'm a little more concerned that it seems a little too easy to blow up central power batteries. So maybe we'll get an explanation for why they are so good at that. I'm kind of hoping there's going to be some hint of the technology or someone whispering in their ear that's why they're so proficient and prolific at blowing up central power batteries, since they seem to be the ones blowing up everybody's.
Oh, you're skipping to the backup. Okay, sorry.
Well, I'm just thinking in general. I just think that, but I thought I certainly liked the main story better than the backup stories, because I thought the artwork was really, Jessica does not look like Jessica at all, and it's colorful, but it's very cartoony. And some of the artwork in this issue. I don't necessarily really believe that Tharos is buying Jessica's story either. It seems a little too. I know he's egotistical and all, but considering he has a master plan, and I'm sure it would be stunning if he's not in on the. We know he's corrupt anyway, so it'd be stunning if he's not really in on what's going on here. So I don't think he may be as. It might be an example of keeping your friends close, but your enemies closer.
Yeah. I like the art in the main story as well, especially when we get to the Hollow Earth. I was looking all around for King Kong, of course. Oh, wait, that's not this story. I do find it really interesting how it is. We obviously knew last issue, but how it's connected to the green, because this battery is literally in the middle of this massive tree. So the green is protecting the lantern, but at the behest of... who? And why did the green agree to this? Who talked to the green? I would assume it'd be a guardian. And if so, how do the guardians have communication with the green? What guardian would be happy with that? Because isn't the green a type of magic, and aren't guardians against magic? Or is the green just more of a force of nature and they don't consider it magic? Obviously, somebody like Ganthet or whatever probably wouldn't have a problem with either. But there's that. Then you also have to talk about the connection of the Guardians to the Earth, which brings me to Ganthet's tale and leprechauns.
Yep.
There's that. pretty on brand with us coming up on St. Patrick's Day.
Yes.
So there's that. And for those of you who don't remember or never heard, there is a story there's a whole bunch of stories out there about all the different offshoots of the Malthusian race, Guardians, Amerons, and so on and so forth. Apparently at one point Guardians split off and became leprechauns. So if you didn't know that, now you know. And no, that's not a joke. One thing I wanted to point out, because it's either a writer's fault or an editor's fault. Tom Kalmiku's wife is not named Tegra. It's Terga. It is not T-E-G-R-A. It is T-E-R-G-A. Just FYI. I was reading this and it threw me off. I was like, wait, what? That's not her name. Tegra? So I went back and made sure I checked my old issue. It's Terga, guys.
Whatever. It's interesting. So if you had to bet, what do you think that is? Do you think that's a legitimate writing error, or do you think that's just a?
I say writing error, but only in terms of I accidentally pressed G before I pressed R on my script. You know what I mean?
Oh, so you think it was a mistake, but you think it was a typo?
Yes, because why would you go back and find Tom's kids' names and all this other information about them, And mess up the wife's name. So there's that. I'm also curious about the potential timeline difference here, because at what point did the Guardian appear to him? At what point did he leave his house? How long between leaving his family and stumbling into this hole? What was that span of time in between stumbling into this hole and Hal coming to find him? What was that span of time? Because I wouldn't be surprised if it was a lengthy amount of time. And also, given all the shit Tom's been through in his life and everything, for him to suddenly wake up from a dream and tell Turga, hey, I'm leaving again. She can't be too happy. it's really hard to tell in this one panel we see her in. She doesn't look too happy. The kids are certainly not happy he's leaving, but he left anyways. We're already very focused on Hal and Carol and everything going on with United Planets and all that. So I doubt we'll circle back to see the fallout of Tom going, hey, honey, I'm back. Finished my mission that the floating blue Guardian told me about in my dream.
Get me a sandwich.
So I don't think we'll see the fallout, but I wouldn't be surprised if there is some, given their history. The tie into Millennium and New Guardians. Okay, cool. That's all right with me. I don't like Millennium, but I will page back and go see if there's anything worth finding in there with comparison to this. I like that they put these little, they took the time for when Hal's flying out of the hole to him have the construct energy all around the rocks. And then the very next panel under it, it's very clear he's putting the rocks in place to cover the hole, because I would have a problem if I wouldn't be surprised if Hal just blasted out of the hole. He was like, I'm a Green Lantern again. And was flying up into the sky without a single thought, but I'm glad he thought, let me cover up this giant hole in the ground that covers a pathway to a very big asset that we need to keep secret for a while. So I'm glad they took the time to artistically render. He is covering up the entrance to this space.
that was a nice touch. Speaking of which, I still don't know how much I buy that, how undetectable that would be. Not even talking about during this run, but going back to the end of the Thorn run, because all the power batteries were being destroyed at the end of the Thorn run, right? When that Guardian was trying to destroy them all.
Yeah.
So I don't quite know how realistic it is that battery could, maybe it might be more realistic. It could be shielded from the United Planet goofballs. But in a way, it's more unbelievable that it would survive what happened at the end of the Thorn run.
Maybe, but the addition of it being protected by the Green actively is a consideration.
It is a consideration. I guess if you want to believe, it's an easy get out of jail free card to play, I suppose.
Another interesting thing too, I feel stupid. I'm not going to call anybody else out for this, just myself. I feel stupid that I kept thinking that the reason that Hal couldn't leave Earth was because of the quarantine, the blockade. The blockade is on Sector 2814, which includes Earth. And they made a specific reference to the fact that it's, because of Earth. But the blockade was on Sector 2814, not specifically around the planet Earth. Why did I think his energy going dead had something to do with the blockade?
Well, I think it was somewhat realistic that we would think that, just because, number one, we didn't have much else to go on really understanding why Hal couldn't leave, and because Sinestro couldn't leave, and it might have been that there was like almost like a double quarantine. It's like nobody could leave 2814, but ideally nobody could leave Earth given the choice, or they would be selective on allowing who could leave Earth. So I think more people probably thought that there was probably something to do with the quarantine than factoring into that than probably didn't, in my opinion.
The rest of this stuff, once he encounters the blockade, there's not a lot of information there. We get Joe. That's cool. So we'll see. The one thing I did want to point out, because I did message Mark about this, a week ago. I was listening to one of our previous eps, and then I realized that there's a strong likelihood that the lanterns that killed Kilowog and attacked that meeting were UP lanterns that had learned to access other colors, and they just accessed the yellow core while on New Korgar to make it look like it was something set up by Sinestro. I realized that potential possibility between last issue and this one. And then this issue comes out, and Hal says, while he's flying to Oa, in his internal monologue, first order of business is to tell the United Planets they have a rogue element inside their organization, lanterns that change their colors, which means Sinestro might have been right. Those yellow lanterns that killed Kilowog, they could have been part of this group. They could be the ones destroying central power batteries. Okay, so Hal says that, and then in our backup story, which I guess we'll take this as a time to start talking about that, we get a story where the United Planets Tharos sends Jessica and another lantern to destroy a power battery. So theory correct, at least seemingly. Whether Tharos is the one behind it, 6 of 1, half a dozen of the other, I don't know. But there's that. They do also mention that Larfleeze is creature known as Larfleeze has been put in an own containment cell. Gotcha.
Yep.
Don't like that just Jessica and this random ass lantern could take on Larfleeze. Don't like that. You were talking about don't like that they can destroy a power battery so simply. Don't like that they were able to take out Larfleeze so quickly. Does everybody forget that? Yes, they've turned him into a comedic punchline, but the dude has the entire power of an entire core in one man. Come on. Jessica, look, I have grown to like Jessica over the years more and more. She has become a more and more capable lantern. But Jessica by herself, let alone with some BS other lantern we don't know anything about, I don't care who the human lantern is, taking out Larfleeze is a big deal. These two shouldn't have been able to do it.
And besides, when we go back to the very beginning, and of course this is a problem. You quote unquote destroy central power batteries enough, then you can have outs to say, well, yeah, you see, that was the original. But remember, back in the day, there wasn't a huge central power battery for the orange ones anyway. There was just a single power battery, a normal sized power battery, which by the way would make it so much easier to destroy. But the point is, these are things that get muddled in the fact that, in fact, have we ever seen a huge full-size, a central power battery?
For the orange lanterns?
Yeah, for the orange lanterns. I don't know if we've ever seen this.
If we did, it was likely during War of the Green Lanterns when Krona was collecting batteries and chaining the entities to them. I'll have to find that double page spread. Yeah, I think you can remember what I'm talking about.
Yeah. But the reality is, that is the one core that's been pretty consistent that did not, arguably the white too, that never had a full central power battery the way we think of it. The orange, he just had the one he was clutching. That literally was the only orange power battery. So I don't know. I'm not thrilled. I mean, I know we will get an explanation for this at something because Jeremy kind of talked about that, about what he's doing with the emotional spectrum or where he's going with this. But I will admit that I'm not really happy with what they're doing with the spectrum. Just like I'm also not thrilled at how these lanterns that, again, by themselves, for the most part, are still peons, just by shifting colors all of a sudden become so invincible. You can buy a little bit of it just because we know certain colors match up better with certain other colors. But I don't know. It seems like, all they have to do is shift colors and Hal can't do shit. Even now that he's using a fully recharged Green Lantern ring, which, of course, the weakness in the plan is he doesn't have an individual power battery. So what happens when his ring runs out of juice? Unless he was expecting he could recharge it on Oa. But it's a little naive of Hal not to be, considering how he was not thrilled with the United Planets to begin with, justifiably. he seems a little, in a way, it's a little too cockeyed optimist in him to think that they may not have any idea what's going on here as he's flying off, that they may be innocent. You know, they may be inept, but over their heads, but they may not, I'm sure they're not behind this. Just like I'm a little concerned with Joe being the architect of figuring all this out. So we'll have to see how these people, that seems like Jack, that just kind of reeks of an editorial decision more than a logical decision. But let's see if they make it work in story where.
I mean, they've made her the detective lantern.
Yeah, so. They make her the detective lantern. We haven't seen her. She hasn't done much detecting to make her earn that badge that people keep throwing at her. That's the problem. It's a tell don't show. We talked about that even in the Thorn run. It's like she didn't do any massive detective work.
Mm-hmm. The image from War of the Green Lanterns I was thinking about was wrong. Krona was just chaining them to giant pillars that had the symbols on them.
Yeah, those were the entities.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought for some reason he had the batteries and was chaining them to them.
No, he was just pulling all the entities out of wherever they were.
Am I thinking of that image from Blackest Night where we had a bunch of batteries on pillars? Oh, it was Sinestro Corps War 25. Didn't we see a big image of a bunch of different lanterns on stone pillars? Or lantern batteries on stone pillars?
Yeah, symbolically you did, yes. But then again, we had human hands clutching the normal size orange power battery, which turned out to be a complete red herring, which I still like. That's another question that we'll never get to ask Jeff Johns one day. What the hell was that about? That's why a lot of people thought it was going to be Luthor, like Lex Luthor or something.
That and the question about like what he was going to do with those magic lanterns, right?
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of things. Then the Hal's blue power ring.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot. And a lot of the other laws we never got. There's tons of shit that Jeff Johns just kind of like swept off the table when either he didn't have any more ideas or while he was getting bored and wanted to move on to something else. But yeah, so there's questions about where Jeremy's going with this that concerns me still. It's still the most enjoyable book, I think, of the three. Mm-hmm. I know, depending how War Journals goes, which is, you know, War Journals kind of on the brink now. Let's see how it goes. I know compared to the Alan Scott book, it says nothing. You could have a blank, you could have 20 empty pages every month and it's as a lantern book. And so probably would be better than that Alan Scott book. But still, this is the most enjoyable book month in and month out. The backup stories are starting to bother me because it seems like at this stage of the game, these pages could be used to be fleshing out the main story as we're getting close to a friggin' year. And yes, we're even closer when you factor in the Night Terrors diversion. But I'm kind of getting backstoried out just because the main story is moving pretty slow at this point.
I mean, we took a gigantic leap forward this issue, so let's see how momentum shifts from here on out. The other thing I was thinking about in terms of Orange Lantern power batteries, I love Agent Orange, the storyline, by the way. But I don't think we ever actually explored much of Larfleeze's little hoard in there. Like, how far back did his cave go? How far down? Like, could there be a central power battery down there? There is an argument against that because Ophidian was in Larfleeze's power battery as opposed to in a central power battery. And you'd think Ophidian would be in the main one if he's anywhere. So that lends credence to the idea that Larfleeze's little battery is the only battery. So, but in terms of like, if there's an argument for there being a big one.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, it could be in Larfleeze's cave somewhere. We just never saw it. But, you know, speaking a bit on the art for the backup story, I agree with you. It's a little too cartoony. I do like, though, that we got Sam Humphries for this. And it's like it's almost like we're getting the best of, you know, like the hits kind of a thing. Because we got a Kyle backup and we got Ron Mars to write it. We get a Jessica backup. We get Sam Humphries to write it. So I'd be very curious moving forward to see what the other backups are going to look like. You know, if there's one beyond the Guy Gardner thing, I know you don't like the backups. I actually kind of do. I like touching base with these other people. Would I like more story? Sure. But that has kind of waned now that we've got such a big piece of the puzzle with this issue. So I'm not quite as worried about pacing or anything anymore because we're finally there where we need to be. And assuming the pace keeps its pace at this point, then I would hope that means we should be okay moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, I do think there's an element to that. I think, and my complaint, you know, with a small c, about the backup stories would be much less relevant to me, for even if this wasn't one big story, which I think this is a problem when you have one 12 issue story or whatever, or more, as opposed to 2 to 3 issue arcs and a solo arc and 2 to 3 issue arcs and a 4 issue arc and things like that. The fact that, and I think sometimes that is really a detriment to the storytelling too, to just do that over and over again, to just, hey, that whole season bullshit, besides the fact that season is for TV, it's not for comic books. The fact that the idea that, oh, there's a one central story that has to carry through all 12 issues all the time, or most of the time. If it wasn't that, then the backup stories would be fine. It's not like I don't like seeing the other lanterns.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that it seems, I mean, up until this issue, that the pace has been dragging out so long, or it's been, the pace has dragged this out so long, that it's kind of hard to, especially when we wasted tons of page time with Sen Sun and all that stuff that nobody gave a shit about.
Mm-hmm. Also in this backup story, didn't Jessica say that she placed the demolition charge at the base of the lantern?
But Jessica said the one she was working with did, I believe so.
She totally blew it. She placed the bomb at the base like a rookie. If you look at the construct retelling of the story, where's the charge being put?
Which page is that? I'm trying to get to it.
That's where they're just reviewing what happened, and you can see the construct retelling of the story.
Let's see.
Where the countdown is happening.
Yeah, it's technically not the base. It's like almost right in the middle, to the middle right of the face of the battery.
Yeah, it's right on one of the lit up funnels. Like, it's in the middle of the battery. And how does Jessica get away with saying it's at the base if they could clearly see where she was putting it in the construct retelling of the story? Or are they saying that they make no point of saying like, hey, she altered it. She actually put it at the base. She didn't say that. So either the artist was reading the script and rendered that wrong, or everybody watching the replaying of what happened is a moron.
I'm trying to look at this again. Then again, this is from Jessica's perspective, right? This is Jessica showing.
I don't think she's. Let's see.
I thought there was something that lantern she worked with made the point of saying that, like, don't believe or whatever. And that's when I think she starts doing the construct replay or whatever.
No, she says later, this is complete rubbish. Don't listen to her. She can't prove anything. So Lantern Endicott, Lord Premier Tharos compels your testimony. Tell us what we see here. Lantern Cruz and I were assigned, you know, blah, 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 destroy central power battery. Okay. And then, so I don't think this is being projected from Jessica. This is got to be just either both of their rings, like they're accessing a database, or Endicott is presenting this. And okay, they installed it. They absorb the explosion. Wait, what? Oh, Jessica says later on the next page. Wait, what? Oh yeah, absolutely. Didn't you just see on the lantern letdown over there? She totally blew it. She placed the bomb at the base like a rookie, and she keeps talking. There's nothing said about, hey, you presented that wrong. You didn't place it there. You placed it at the base. Like, they didn't say that.
Yeah, I mean, she could be playing head games, but it's also, and but it's a, there's also a whole aspect of how the hell would Jessica know how to blow up a central power battery?
Well, yeah.
So rookie mistake, which is somewhat of a, because, you know, not that Jessica is the most experienced Green Lantern Corps member either, especially with her time out in space, but I don't know. There's a lot of little wiggle room here, which could be open to interpretation. And again, yes, maybe it's a composite, maybe it's a neutral, maybe it's just like a hologram recording from somebody's ring or like almost like a drone or something that was going on. I don't. It's hard to know. It doesn't match what we actually see. So either something either that was done on purpose. It's, just to see the just to kind of imply that Jessica's really good at playing the mind games and being able to be persuasive to people to make them think that, hey, didn't you just see that? Which, of course, all they had to do was theoretically hit rewind to if that was absolutely not what really happened, but Jessica was trying to spin it. I don't know. Yeah, I don't really know. I do think the last two backup stories are interesting, but they obviously would have been better if you had paired better artists, especially when or more traditional artists with the writer when they were actually working on the book. I think it probably would have helped. But
yeah, for sure. One thing I will say I don't like about this, and we anticipated this. We knew this was going to happen. They were just going to skip right over it. There's an internal narrative bubble that says one time I basically tripped and ended up as a yellow lantern. That's bad.
Yeah, I didn't like.
And then and even though I'm back in the green suit again, I'll never be normal lanterns to the others. And that's it. That's all we get. I basically tripped into being a yellow lantern. And despite the fact that so many of us actually was like, wow, cool idea. One of the only ones during Thorne's run. We want to see actually more of that. They dismiss it as it was basically a flash in the pan. Listen, that total accident. Uh-oh. And anyway, back to status quo.
Yeah, I didn't like that either. Even though I don't like it, but unfortunately you have to understand some of it because of the fact that you have to clean up other people's garbage especially when you spread a lot of garbage out like Jeffrey Thorne did, that was way too ambitious, way over his head. And as far as planning ahead for things that when you don't even know how much time you have on the book, like we talked about, that you just layer upon layer, and then somebody else has to come through with a broom and kind of push this out of the way and put it in neat piles as much as you can. So unfortunately, yes, even going back to the whatchamacallit, I always draw a blank. What the hell did Thorne write first, those first two issues? What was the event?
Thorne's first two issues?
The first two things that he wrote for John Stewart on.
Future State.
Future State. Yeah, the only thing one of the most interesting things in Future State was Jessica becoming a Yellow Lantern. So the reality is, it's kind of apropos that was one of the few things during the Future State and the Thorne run that had any kind of natural interest of like, yeah, that's a good idea. We should follow up on that. And then boom, nothing. And then I think Jeremy's doing the best he can with some of this stuff. I don't necessarily know that it's all working. And I don't, and to be fair, it's still maybe too soon to know, to make a general assessment how much it works or it doesn't work. But I guess I'm slowly getting close to the point where I wish it would be working more for me.
Yeah. I think it's actually really funny that they there's such an obvious, that's over with, and within the span of one narrative box. Because remember when we were talking to Jeremy and he was talking about taking over the Green Lantern series, he was told by an editor or someone, you can just put it in like an introductory page that everything's back to normal now. And he was like, no, I can't do that. Remember he mentioned that?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah. So and it's not Jeremy writing this backup. It's Sam Humphries. So it's very funny that within Jeremy's run, somebody ended up doing that with this whole Jessica Cruz Yellow Lantern thing. It's just like, back to status quo. Don't worry about it. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain.
And again, who knows? That might have been part of the plan or part of the compromise anyway. The idea that, well, we can't just do that on one page to sum up everything. But as time goes by and we start doing some of these backup stories, and then we'll start, disposing of some of the trash, if you will, the baggage that was left over from the last run, and or put it, broom it and push it into a closet and close the door, and then we don't have to deal with it.
Jessica being yellow was not baggage or trash, though. It was interesting.
No, I agree with you. I agree, but I mean it from the perspective that it was kind of like a hand grenade and the shrapnel was going everywhere. And it's just that there was so much stuff to deal with, and that just happened to be why. And I did mention it was the most interesting thing probably that came out of Futures, but it was one of those things where it's baggage that has to be dealt with because there was so much stuff from the Thorne run that was that was never possibly going to be resolved. And but again, that's part of my issue, is that he literally designed it because he was dreaming of this 3-year arc. So even if he would have gotten, quote unquote, all the answers from the very design of what he was doing, it was like, oh, well, it's going to be like 3 years and 36 issues down the road. That's really ambitious for somebody who ain't all that based on the clout that you have to be able to, you know, if it was Morrison doing that, okay, because Morrison is, if he wants to write the book for 3 years, he'll be writing the book for 3 years. But most people don't have that kind of clout, and certainly not somebody who, yeah. So it's like a catch 22. Whoever was coming in after Thorne was going to have the benefit of not being Thorne, but there was a lot of crap you had to try to clean up. And even going down the whole United Planets angle, when we get the resolution of this and they get thrown out and shown the door, it'll be one of those things where, hey, it'll make you appreciate those blue bastards again, kind of like the whole point of getting rid of Superman and Batman, or giving people quote unquote what they want, just to say, see, you're really happy now that these guys are back, aren't you? So yeah. Maybe that was part of the ploy or part of the reason why going down this road. But yeah, this whole United Planets garbage and I use that accurately, just can't wrap up soon enough, because this whole turning over the core to them made no sense whatsoever. And it really didn't make any sense, but.
Last thing I'll mention real quick, because we were talking about it a second ago. Guy's Bogus Lobo Adventure is in issue 10, next issue, is listed as part 1 of 3. So we'll be seeing Guy in the backups until issue 12, and then maybe something will happen with 13. So, but yeah, I enjoyed this issue. I'm not enthused about the Millennium Connection, but that's because I'm not enthused about Millennium. It was a poorly written story, and I don't like thinking about it, but I don't mind the connection to it. So, at least it's something I know, so whatever. And there was a lot of, you made Tom Kalmiku one of the guardians of the future or whatever for humanity, and then never did anything with that. And I'm glad Tom said he's the last one remaining, because the rest of them weren't very inspiring characters to begin with. If you're going to have one left standing, it's got to be the one with major ties to Green Lantern, which forced the whole Millennium thing to begin with. So whatever. It is a massive part of Green Lantern history. So it's not out of left field for us to reference it. I guess my question now is that timeline with Tom receiving the message and up until he sees Hal down in the Hollow Earth, and what guardian was that?
Yeah, that is true. I did think about that too. But and like you said, it's also the time frame. The time frame of when exactly did that guardian come to see Tom and give him that marching order, or the world needs you.
Maybe it was Appa.
Yeah, I think we can probably bet that it ain't him. I don't see any Malthusian bandages. What the hell were they called?
Cronus evolutionary thing.
Evolutionary bandages, right? That's what they were called. Yeah.
I don't know if that's what they were called, but that was the point of them, right? To evolve him to be a regular guardian.
Yeah, but there was a term. I just couldn't remember if it was something. Yeah, there was Malthusian something bandages. It may be evolutionary, but that's what that's. That's what it kind of reminded me of when I think of Ollie Ops at this point. If they were going to bring him back, you'd kind of expect to see something like that. Still amazing we haven't seen him back.
He was such a big deal. We really needed to see him, to be honest.
Yeah, that's a character that is way overdue to return. And he was he's a much more important character than this. But it's just like it's shocking in a way that we haven't seen Legion ever come back after that.
Or what's his name? Big dude. Had Hal's Gring.
Malvolio.
Yeah, Malvolio.
Yep, since they did kind of have almost a built-in parallax excuse for them, too, in the beginning, as people had speculated, hey, that's the out. So yeah, it is interesting when we look back at this. There are certain villains that you would think that are just ripe to come back, and not yet, but
yeah,
we'll see. We'll see. I did like this issue. I hope we, like you said, I hope this pace continues where we start getting more and more stuff coming now. I just hope it doesn't slow down again. And I hope we do get an explanation for, we probably won't, of how Joe is able to figure this out other than, oh, it's Joe. So of course she figured it out.
I'm just very curious about the connection to the green, because in another universe, in a couple of other universes, remember, because there's was it Earth 2? That was the name of the title, right?
I think
during the New 52.
I think that was correct.
So that lantern was the green, the protector of the green. And then there's also Stan Lee's universe, remember? Where This is not the first time we've seen a connection between lanterns and the green. And I'd be very curious to see what they're planning on doing in quote unquote our universe. So
no, I just hope you're not disappointed that maybe there isn't as much of a plan, a conscious plan to do anything with it at the moment. Maybe more of an excuse or an out to figure out how there could be another central power battery that slipped through.
All right. Do you want to talk about the toy real quick?
Oh, the John Stewart figure? I'm curious if it's still available. Let me look this up. So today, as we're recording this, which is about the 13th, Wednesday the 13th, that another McFarlane Green Lantern figure dropped. This one luckily is not a gold label exclusive that you can only get in one friggin' place.
Yep.
And what's the Build-A-Figure in this one?
Plastic Man.
Oh God, that's a pretty shitty one anyway. But they came out with the with John Stewart in his Green Lantern Green Arrow uniform. So, which I know you probably will have thoughts on. I'm trying to see if I can find it. I should have just looked for John Stewart instead.
Yeah, I posted about it over on Twitter, guys. You guys can go take a look if you want. But like, the costume matches Green Lantern Green Arrow, his first appearance in Green Lantern Green Arrow at number 87. The symbol is, I'm not going to go into it because I could spend way too long. We don't have a lot of time. Does the symbol match what we see on Green Lantern Green Arrow 87? Yes. I, at this present moment, don't remember seeing John in this costume with this symbol in interior pages of Green Lantern publication. I have found a couple of other examples of the, and by the symbol, what I'm talking about, guys, is it's the regular Green Lantern symbol in the white circle, but the lines at the top and the bottom of the Green Lantern symbol have been curved downwards or inwards, and the green, the interior part of the Green Lantern symbol is also green. And I don't remember seeing that within publication history, let alone within the actual issue they're referencing, because the toy that we're talking about, the action figure we're talking about, McFarlane puts a little trading card in all these ones, right? They put a trading card of the cover of Green Lantern Green Arrow 87 in there. So clearly they're referencing this era, but it seems to be they designed the symbol for this figure based on this cover and not on this era, which I don't remember seeing this symbol in the interior pages. So I don't know. Somebody can point me out wrong. Like, I am straight up admitting I don't remember. There could be a section of publication history I'm just completely spacing on. But it seems it's the most iconic, one of the most iconic images and covers for John Stewart ever, his introduction in one of the most historic runs of Green Lantern ever. It wouldn't be out of left field for somebody to make a figure design off of a cover and a cover only, as opposed to an entire run. If they're going to do it, it makes sense to do it for this cover. But it's just strange to me still. Something's not jiving in my head with them making an entire figure based off of one image. So I don't know. So
it is sold out on Big Bad Toy Store for pre-order, but it's still available on Entertainment Earth as we're recording this. Actually, and the good thing is, when you look at the looking at the figure on Entertainment Earth, actually, I do kind of like this figure a little bit more. The action pose or whatever, the way they had it promoted on Big Bad Toy Store, I didn't like. they kind of turned me off immediately. It's like, well, that's not even that great a look, great a sculpt. When you actually look at the figure and you look at and the costume, even with the questionable chest symbol, that it's a unique enough John Stewart that I think if you're a John Stewart fan, yeah, you definitely are going to want this. I'm not, I don't need to run out and get it for me personally, but I do want, but I certainly think it's better than, even with his flaws, it's probably better than that first Kyle that we got. And it's obviously better than the Parallax that we got. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a, and, but don't be surprised if, you know, in a few months, we're going to get another John Stewart where maybe the symbol is absolutely correct and something else is slightly different just to try to make you buy another one, because that seems to be the McFarlane business model.
Yeah, I'm not getting this, guys. As much as I love Green Lantern, Green Arrow, I'm tempted, but and I mentioned this the last time we talked about McFarlane figures, because we were talking about the Spectre, right?
Yes.
These Build-A-Figures being like taking up half the damn window is driving me insane. You know, Mark and I talked about this earlier today, but I don't want the, if I'm going to, I understand that action figures aren't necessarily meant to be kept in the box. I get that. At the same time, you have to know people, you know, McFarlane especially has to know some people do that. A lot of people do that, and to take it into consideration, because, man, putting this on the wall would look ugly. They put so much information about which Build-A-Figure is connected to which pieces of the Build-A-Figure are connected to which individual figure, and they take up the entire back of the box to show the art of, you know, which is what, that it'd be okay to kind of try and hide the collective, the Build-A-Figure pieces. I don't see, I'm looking at a picture of this figure in its box. I don't see any reason these two legs for Eel don't have to be underneath this banner where we see the collect Plastic Man and then the DC Multiverse symbol. Like, I don't see any reason those legs couldn't be hidden behind that. It bothers me. It probably doesn't bother a significant portion of the consumer base, but it bothers me enough to not get it. Or make it a factor in not getting it, in addition to my problems with the figure itself.
Understandable.
Because I only have a five-foot IKEA glass display case. I never got a second. I live in apartments. These son of a bitches are hard to move. So there's that. Do we have anything else we wanted to talk about tonight?
No, I think we've done more than enough, I think, for tonight.
All right, guys, just 2 seconds. Lantern Cast Vids on YouTube. There's a new video over there, trading card unboxing of the Panini 2017 Panini Games trading card game, the Green Lantern Metacross stuff. I did another opening of those. I bought another 25 packs. If you guys want to go check that out, go check it out. It's over on Lantern Cast Vids. Just wanted to let y'all know it was going to be, I was already done filming the last time we recorded an episode, but I didn't want to say anything till the episode was actually up in case there was any delays. So there is a new video on our YouTube channel. Go check it out.
Nicely done. So lanterncast.com. The email is lanterncast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook when it's operating. #GLcast, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean. Last but not least, if you'd like to leave us a voicemail or a text, 708-LANTERN, and let us know what you think.
All right, guys, we'll talk to you later.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.